Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 30th of May, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk to Ms. Sarah McNair Grove and Todd Hunt about rehearsals for the Juneau Volunteer Marching Band. We'll also find out about the upcoming Hearthside Books Wildlife Authors Cruise with guest Flip Nicklin. For the details on Saturday's iPad Users Group meeting and more, at Reuters Almanac today on a Juneau afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, looks like rain with low temperatures around 43 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, more rain showers with high temperatures around 51 degrees. Forecast for Thursday night, cloudy skies with scattered showers. And the forecast for Friday looks like cloudy skies with rainy weather with high temperatures around 55 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The National Indian Gaming Commission has ruled that a proposed Native American casino in northeast Oklahoma is not eligible for gaming. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, the tribe wanting to build the facility remains defiant.
A letter from the chairwoman of the commission said the property for the planned casino is on Native American land, but the Muscogee Creek Nation, not the Kailigi tribal town, has legal jurisdiction over it. Town King Tiger Hobia said attorneys have repeatedly said the tribe doesn't need permission from the commission or others to build a casino on the land, which was being leased to the developers by two Creek Nation members who own it. Earlier this month, U.S. District Judge Gregory Frizzell granted a temporary injunction to stop construction at the site. The Kailigi tribal town argues the land is within the boundaries of the former Creek Nation Confederacy, which consisted of several tribal towns. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney.
Alaska Governor Sean Parnell has signed legislation to create a council that will look at how to save Alaska's native languages. KDLG's Mike Mason has more.
Governor Parnell was in Dillingham Monday to speak during the opening ceremony of a large conference focused on the sobriety movement in Alaska. The governor took the time during his speech to speak to and to sign Senate Bill 130 that passed the legislature during this year's regular session.
One of the ways that we can ensure a more healthy Alaska and more healthy communities is to ensure that Alaska Native languages are preserved, restored, and revitalized. And today, I brought with me Senator Olson's bill that will help us accomplish these goals.
Senate Bill 130 passed with nearly no opposition in the Alaska House and Senate, and it establishes a new Alaskan Native Language and Advisory Council. Parnell stressed the importance of keeping Native languages alive.
We know that without language preservation, a culture dies. That is intolerable. That is not acceptable. And as Alaskans, we honor and celebrate our traditional cultures. And today we do this by assuring that the state is now all in making sure that these languages live on. So I'm going to sign this.
Many of those in attendance for Governor Parnell's speech were Alaskan Native or work in Native villages, and they gave the governor a rousing round of applause for putting his signature on the bill.
And now, as a matter of law, the state is all in restoring and revitalizing the Alaska Native languages.
The new Alaska Native Language and Advisory Council will be tasked with looking at the state of the Native languages in Alaska and making recommendations to the governor and the legislature about programs needed to make sure that those languages continue to live and be used. The legislation creating the council was supported by a number of Alaska Native organizations, including the Alaska Native Heritage Center and the Alaska Federation of Natives. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
The Siouan Big Crow Boys and Girls Club is celebrating its establishment this week. The club on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota serves the Oglala Sioux community. It was the first club to be established in Indian Country 20 years ago. The 30,000-square-foot facility includes the largest nearby library and a state-of-the-art tech center. The club is holding an event Saturday, which includes a number of guest speakers. The Native Women's Association of Canada and Justice for Girls unveiled a report today on the impacts of intergenerational residential school-linked trauma on Native women and girls in custody. According to the Native Women's Association of Canada, the outcomes are from more than 300 participants, including First Nations, Métis, and Inuit women. The advocacy group says many of the women and girls had family members who went to residential schools, where many students were physically and mentally abused. On this day in 1650, the New Netherlands Directors of Council passed an ordinance against the making of fake wampum, beads made from shell. It was discovered that manufacturers in Europe were making fake beads to pay Native Americans in New England states. Wampum was widely used in trade and for other purposes. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guest is Sarah McNair Grove from the Juneau Volunteer Marching Band, talking about rehearsals starting tonight. Sarah, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Great. It's great to be here and to advertise that we're looking for people to come and play in the Juneau Volunteer Marching Band. It's a tradition that has been going on in Juneau for, I think this will be the 37th year.
How did it all start?
It all started, I think, in 1975 when there were three individuals who were watching the 4th of July parade and said, "It's awfully quiet. There's no band." And they decided they knew enough individuals to put together a marching band for the 1976 parade, and we've been going ever since then.
How many members did it have back then, and how many members does it have now?
I believe the first marching band had about 45 members. And it varies every year. We have probably 25 to 30 members now.
What's the most popular instrument?
Trombone, saxophones are very popular these days. Lots of flutes. Trombones are always great in a parade. So anything.
What's the most unique instrument that people bring?
I think the sousaphone is probably the most interesting.
And what songs do you practice and perform? What songs do you practice and perform?
For the parade, we do marches. We generally do Sousa, Stars and Stripes, and we do Washington Post, and then usually another one that varies from year to year. We also, in addition to the Juneau and Douglas parades, we have two sit-down concerts in Marine Park, and there we play sort of more music from movies, Disney. We play the Armed Forces, medleys, and sort of junior high music that's just fun to come and listen to.
And you practice on Wednesdays?
We practice on Wednesday night out at Thunder Mountain High School. Tonight will be our first night from 7 to 9 p.m., and we usually practice inside the music for the first couple of weeks, and then we do go out and march for half an hour or so the last couple of weeks before the parade.
What kind of marching routines or patterns do you have?
We call ourselves the glacial turns. We don't do very, very much precision marching. We get out and march to the time and kind of try to keep rows, but have a lot of fun doing it.
What level players are you looking for?
Anybody that plays that is junior high age and older is welcome to come.
So you don't have to be an expert?
You don't have to be an expert. You just need to be able to march and play at the same time.
All right. If people need more information about it, how do they let you know?
We have a website, the Juneau Community Bands, which will have the information on it. We also have an email, which is juneaucommunitybands@gmail.com, which can get more information.
All right, rehearsals start tonight at 7 o'clock and go on in future Wednesdays until the 4th of July.
That's correct.
Sounds like a lot of fun. What instrument do you play?
I play a clarinet.
When did you pick the clarinet?
I picked it when I was probably in 5th or 6th grade, so I've been playing it for a long time.
All right, Sarah McNegro, anything like that I might have forgotten to ask?
No, but just in addition to the parades, we are having two concerts in Marine Park on Thursday noon, June 28th, and also Sunday, July 1st at 3 o'clock. So we'd like to have people come down and participate in those as well.
As long as we're talking about Marine Park, the Thunder Mountain Big Band is going to open up the concerts in the Park Series this Friday night, and I believe 7 o'clock down at Marine Park. So that should be a lot of fun series.
Great.
Sarah, thank you for coming down the station today.
Thank you for having me.
music to get you ready to practice for the Juneau Volunteer Marching Band. And again, those rehearsals start tonight at 7 o'clock at the Thunder Mountain High School Band Room. Time is 3:13. You are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are here to talk about the Hearthside Wildlife Office Cruise going on Friday, June 8th from 6 to 9 p.m. Flip and Linda Nicklin, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
You both read books about whales.
Yes, we do.
Flip, now you just started getting involved with whales with your dad riding a whale. Is that true?
Back in 1963 when my dad rode a whale off San Diego, when we still just thought of them as big fish, a much different view than we have today.
Could you go over your life briefly with whales?
Well, my dad rode that whale in 63. That led us to meet National Geographic. My dad did a number of documentaries about whales. One of those in 1979 was an IMAX film about whales in Hawaii, and I was trying to be a photographer and went along to do production stills. I met a bunch of young graduate students studying humpback whales in Hawaii, thought it'd be a one-time thing, and spent the next 30-something years covering stories about whales, 20 different magazine stories and 10 books, getting to know about whales and whale research.
And you have a great book out about whales. It just came out about a half a year ago.
Yeah, Among Giants, A Life with Whales. And we'll have that book and a number of the books by different authors on the boat coming up this Friday.
And Linda Nicklin, you are also an author of a couple of books for children about whales. Could you describe them, please?
Yeah, there's two. One's about dolphins and one's about whales. And they're part of a series by National Geographic Children's Books. So Face to Face with Whales, Face to Face with Dolphins takes a personal perspective. In this case, it's Flip as the photographer who's telling about the whales or dolphins at a 6 to 9 year old reading level, and I did the writing for the books.
It was like a lot of fun. Obviously, you get a good inspiration.
Yes, absolutely. You know, from the stories that he has of close up face to face encounters with animals and the photographs, of course, and then using that to tell kids something about the animals themselves.
Just tell me about the cruise coming up on June 8th, if you could, please.
Well, this will be the third year we've done the cruise, and it's great. It gives us a chance to meet people who are reading the books and buying the books and talk to them face-to-face. But the great time is you meet other people in the area who are writers. And, I mean, Kim Heacox and Lynn Schooler, Bob Armstrong, Kathy Hooker. There's a bunch of great folks coming along. They also make presentations. Plus, there's a wine tasting and snacks. It's a really fun afternoon.
What's the course of the evening?
$50, $50 a head, 6 to 9 p.m., and you can get tickets at either Hearthside Downtown or at the Nugget Mall.
Are the presentations formal?
Not, I wouldn't say formal. Each author will have an opportunity to speak over the loudspeaker, the microphone there, and most people take 5 or 10 minutes or so and say something to the group as a whole, and then a lot of the time is just face-to-face. And, you know, it's exciting for me, a chance to interact and mingle with some of these people who are writing about nature in the area, writing about history in the area, that have had a lot of experience and knowledge and so on an individual basis as well.
Well, one of the great things, I think, is it's also a chance you're trying to give a little talk and get to know people, but you might have whales right outside the window, and then everything goes to heck, and you go look at whales or sea lions or whatever else is going on. That's makes it a lot of fun.
And who are all the authors involved?
There's we have a whole list here. So Kim Heacox, Sarah Isto, Flip and Linda Nicklin, Jim Cohn, Lynn Schooler, Bob Armstrong, Kathy Hawker, and John Hudson will all be involved this year.
Sounds like a lot of fun, and you've been on them before?
Yes.
This is your third year?
This is our third year for Flip and I to do it.
And it's been just great. You know, we've had so many whales around already. Just yesterday we had a mother and calf lunch feeding right outside of Auk Bay where the cruise starts, and the calf jumping all over the place. It's been, I think it's going to be a very fun year to go out and knock around. Weather's been good, and you never know what you're going to see.
And it starts at 6 o'clock on Friday, June 8th, and goes until about 9 o'clock?
That's it, 6 to 9, and, you know, with the long days, it's all sort of the prime time, nice afternoons to be out, and I always bring a camera. As much as it's nice to talk to folks, if there's whales doing fun stuff, it's nice to sneak out and take a picture, too.
And where do people meet?
At Stater Harbor, Auk Bay. So the will be out on one of the big catamarans, the Allen Marine boats, out of Satter Harbor.
Yeah, they can be right at the head of the dock ramp, at right next to the harbor office.
I imagine it's a good idea if people get there about a half hour early.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. It's really well organized. You'll see the big group meeting people right there, and it's been a lot of fun. I mean, it's something we look forward to every year.
So, Flip and Linda, could you give me a sense or two about how whales have affected your life, Linda?
Well, you know, whales have gotten more and more interesting the more I'm around them, to me. So,
in what way?
Well, initially, you know, I think whales are impressive partly just because they're big. That sounds kind of obvious, but, you know, the experience of being near in a boat, for example, near an animal that's 45 feet long, or seeing it lunge feed and looking into a mouth that a Volkswagen bug could fit inside of is impressive. But as I get to be around them more and learn more about them, some things about the way that they interact, you know, their apparent intelligence and the way that they're social has been made them become just more and more interesting to me, and made me really realize how much I don't know. It's brought up that idea of mystery, you know. An example is with the cooperative bubble net feeding that they do up here, for example. They use bubbles as tools, which is in itself a pretty intelligent thing, to be able to form bubbles to herd herring as they do when they cooperative bubble net feed. But they have very choreographed roles when they do those bubble net groups when it's cooperative. So there's a whale that makes a sound to scare the herring into a tighter mass. There's a whale that blows the bubbles. They all have their positions as they come up through the bubble net to capture the prey, the herring. And it's highly coordinated and highly cooperative. And those animals that are cooperating aren't necessarily kin. They're not related to each other. They're a team. They're forming a team to do this. And they're doing this highly cooperative, choreographed behavior. And at the same time, they're open to outsiders. They're open to other whales coming in. So they have a tolerance, apparently, for mistakes, for example. And they'll allow other animals to join them. So, you know, just that one type of feeding behavior shows this rather complex awareness of a, you know, I mean, we don't really know what they're aware of, but it seems to show awareness of a social group beyond just family, and, you know, allowing somebody to learn, another whale to learn, even at the cost of maybe getting some herring that day, and all those kinds of things that are, you know, you wouldn't predict just by looking at them, for example. So that's been really intriguing to me.
Well, I think one of the things that if people don't know, in the winter, Linda and I have a group house for whale research in Maui each year. So we spend about 100 days every winter talking about whales every night with some of the guys who and men and women who know the stories best. So it keeps you all charged up in the story. As Linda says, it's always changing. It makes you excited for every new season, both in Hawaii or in Alaska.
One more time, could you provide the details about the cruise again?
It's 9 o'clock at Satter Harbor. I'm 6 to 9 o'clock, I'm sorry. $50 a head. The tickets are available at the Hearthside stores, Hearthside bookstores, at Nugget Mall or downtown. And I think, though it starts at 6, coming a half an hour early would be a good idea.
All right. If people need more information, they could call Hearthside Books directly. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Just to remind people to come along and hope to have a good time.
Thanks, Flip and Linda. Thank you for coming down to the station today and have a good time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Time is 3:26, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau, a few sounds of the humpback whale. In the studio with me now is Mark Stanley here to talk about an iPad users group meeting coming up this Saturday, June 2nd, from 9 until 11 a.m. Mark, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you, Jeff.
So for people who do not know, what is an iPad?
An iPad is a tablet computer, about 6 by 9 inches, and it's portable, so it's somewhere between an iPhone and a laptop computer.
And in what ways does it rock the world?
I think that depends on who you talk to. Yeah, on the one hand, it's not cheap, not as inexpensive as pencil and paper, but on the other hand, it's something that we're finding all kinds of people are walking around with, using them as kind of somewhere between a smartphone and a laptop. It's got everything on it. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of apps for people of all walks of life.
Apps being short for applications.
I'm sorry?
App being short for applications?
Yes, that's the key word is apps, APPS, for short for applications.
How many apps do you have on your iPad?
Not that many. I'm not what the kids would call a power user. I probably have 30 or 40 that I like using.
Such as?
Well, we're going to talk about a couple of them this Saturday at the users group. One is TuneIn Radio. So I often listen to the show on my iPhone or my iPad with the benefit that I can record it and listen to it later. So there's an app listening to the radio. Other apps that people use are photography, taking pictures, doing email, searching the web, things like that.
As you came in here, you showed me Philip Nicklin's new app.
I did. When we were sitting outside talking about what they were going to do with the author's cruise, he said, and oh, by the way, my publisher created an app, so I was sitting here looking at Amongst Giants app that you can purchase for your iPad and look at all those terrific photos that he's made of the whales that they were talking about.
This is the second iPad users group meeting. What happened during the first one?
Well, the first one, and we had about 18 people show up from different walks of life. We had it at the university, and I really appreciate Dr. Laster, who was here with you last time, emphasizing this is not just for educators. This is for the whole community. And we did three presentations on the Apple TV. We talked a little bit about adding audio into your computer. And then right now I'm drawing a blank on the third one, which was my presentation, and I can't remember what it was. But we had we had children there. We had retired folks there. We had people from all parts of the community, and that's what we want to emphasize with this iPad users group.
Do you have to be a power user?
No, just the opposite. We do suggest that you have an iPad so that it's an opportunity for you to bring your iPad in and mingle around with the group and learn from each other and teach each other so that we can really create a true community of learners.
I myself use an iPad pretty much every day on my show and also at home.
You mentioned that. Could you describe that? I'm kind of curious. I don't know, just how you use it or what that looks like for you?
Well, it's a program called Notebooks, which is pretty much a glorified diary that I have to input a lot of information myself still, but I write down my guests for the show and also my questions that I'm going to ask so I can actually sit lying down on the couch after reading a book about a subject or reading a little bit about somebody online. And I can go to a different app, the Notebooks app, and find out information about it's going to come up with some questions.
And if I could get you to color that, just so how, if any, has that rocked your world?
It made my writing legible to myself and other people.
And that's a common experience. A lot of times I'm doing some research right now in my dissertation looking at students and one-to-one laptop programs. And one of the most common things they say they like about a smartphone, an iPad, or a laptop is that their writing now is intelligible and they spend less time worrying about the mechanics of getting their ideas out and just getting their ideas out.
Well, some people are all thumbs that way.
In some way, but we find that the students, which are the phrase that's used a lot is digital native because they grew up and were born in a time when all this technology was around, they're much more comfortable with it than the adults. And so oftentimes, and this is kind of the idea of the users group, it's let's get the young people, older people together and let's just learn from each other.
What I like about the iPad versus my iPhone is the buttons are so much bigger and I could actually touch them a little bit more accurately.
That's fair. And, you know, earlier today on the NPR news, they talked about the Apple TV, this idea that what Apple did for music with the iTunes and iPod and et cetera, There's rumors now that Apple's going to do something with ITV. And the guy that was speculating on it, again on your show earlier this afternoon, said it's probably already here. And so the speculation would be that the iPad would be a logical screen for a TV. And that's just my unintelligent opinion. But I think the point is that the iPad represents that physical middle ground between a phone and a laptop, much easier to carry around, doesn't have any moving parts, and it's just that much easier to use.
I keep remembering that from your part of the presentation, no moving parts. It makes it nice and portable and easily less likely to break.
It does, and then if you extend that idea about that, technically this is pretty cool, these little tablets, and they're showing up. There's Apple products. There's other manufacturers that are making them. That if you looked at where we'll be 5 years with kids and schools and all the digital textbooks and all the apps that people are not only consuming, but one of the growing fastest, not industries, but interests certainly, is this idea of teaching people to make apps, make their own apps. You know, if you think of the different apps that exist today, that probably will be tenfold in another 5 years. And we're kind of hoping that Juno becomes part of that, not industry, but certainly that milieu of people that are interested in building their own apps.
You can learn to do that on iTunes U.
You can.
All right, so your iPad users group meeting, the second one, are you going to have much more after this, or are you going to take a break for the season?
We're going to take a break for the summer, but to be honest, we're going to be driven by our users. So one of the discussions this Saturday will be when and how often people want to meet. We're kind of glad that we've gotten it off the ground. Again, we had a good response last month. We've got some flyers out. We sure appreciate you letting us share the fact of the users group on your show. But this Saturday from 9 to 11, we're going to meet at the university, and we're hoping that more people will come out, not only from an interest of learning, but from the standpoint of being willing to share as well.
This is the Glacier View Room?
It's in the Glacier View Room, and this Saturday we picked three apps. Is it okay if I talk about those just a little bit?
Please do.
One is FaceTime, which is sort of Apple's version of Skype. And what it does is it comes with iPhones and iPads, and just as you and I might Skype using the voice over internet protocols attached to Skype, now owned by Microsoft, Apple has sort of its own version of that called FaceTime. So we're going to be doing FaceTime with some people in Anchorage on Saturday and using the app and showing the people that come to the users group what FaceTime looks like.
Any other two presentations?
The other one is VoiceOver Slides. One of a local educator, turns out, enjoys editing her photos and putting a voiceover so she can narrate her pictures and share those out as little slideshows or movies. So she's going to talk about that. And then the third one is I'm going to get to talk about TuneIn Radio, this radio app that I use where I can listen to all kinds of radio from all over the world. As you know, many, many, many radio stations are now streaming their audio feed. And so with this app, I'm able to listen to radio from all over the world. And also because I can record it, I have the ability to kind of schedule it around my time so that if I miss your show, say in the afternoon, I can record it, set to have it recorded, and then enjoy it later on in the evening.
Oh, joy, oh, joy. Now, we may be talking to the educated already, but could you explain for the people who do not know what an app is and how to get an app put on their iPad?
Sure. Apps are really, like you said, applications. They are simply tools that different people have created for different purposes, whether it's email or photography or sound or games that are different applications. But in the Apple world, to get an app, you simply go to what Apple has created called an app store, and you can browse there and look for dictionaries or Sudoku games or tips on gardening. And if there's one that interests you, you can download it. But the big difference these days with iPad and iPad apps is that you're looking at the cost of a dollar. The most expensive app I've ever seen was like $30, whereas on a laptop computer, $30 would be cheap for a computer app. So apps for iPhones, iPads are affordable.
What makes them so cheap? Volume?
I don't know. It's a good theory. I know several developers down in the lower 48 who say because it's not expensive to program for them, you have to have fewer lines of code. I think somewhere in there may be the answer, but I'm not for sure.
Well, you may, if you know for sure, go to the iPad users group meeting this Saturday from 9 to 11 at the Glacier View Room. Mark Stanley, thank you for coming by. Anything you'd like to add to that I might have forgotten to ask?
Just this. Marty said it last time. We don't want to give the impression that we're just doing presentations. We really want to encourage people to bring their iPad to listen some, but to use that phrase, messing about. We really want to give people the chance to mess about with their iPads, with other iPad users in Juneau.
And Mark Stanley, thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 30th of May, 2012. It was on this day, 1849, Henry David Thoreau published himself his own book, A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers. It was his first book, an account of a two-week trip that he'd taken with his brother John 10 years before from Massachusetts to New Hampshire and back. The two brothers were very close. Henry was the introverted, studious one. John was more gregarious and fun-loving. John helped to pay his brother's tuition to Harvard. He helped Thoreau open his own school when he was fired from his teaching job because he objected to corporal punishment. A few years after their boat trip, John Thoreau died unexpectedly from tetanus. He died in his brother's arms, and Thoreau decided to seclude himself. He started building his cabin by the bank of Walden Pond, lived there for 2 years, and he completed the drafts of both A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers and a series of lectures that would eventually become his classic Walden. Since the book A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers was rejected, he was only able to publish it by paying for its printing from its sales. And 4 years later, after he paid off the printing debt, Thoreau wrote in his journal that his publisher had delivered the remaining unsold copies to his home. He said, "I have now a library of nearly 900 volumes, over 700 of which I wrote myself." Here's a poem for today, lines from a long poem by Ron Padgett entitled How to Be Perfect. Get some sleep. Eat an orange every morning. Be friendly. It will help make you happy. Hope for everything. Expect nothing. Take care of things close to home first. Straighten up your room before you save the world. Then save the world. Be nice to people before they have a chance to behave badly. Wear comfortable shoes. Do not spend too much time with large groups of people. Plan your day so you never have to rush. Show your appreciation to people who do things for you, even if you have paid them, even if they do favors you don't want. After dinner, wash the dishes. Calm down. Don't expect your children to love you, so they can if they want to. Don't be too self-critical or too self-congratulatory. Don't think that progress exists. It doesn't. Imagine what you would like to see happen, and then don't do anything to make it impossible. Forgive your country every once in a while. If that is not possible, go to another one. If you feel tired, rest. Don't be depressed about growing older. It will make you feel even older, which is depressing. If you burn your finger, put ice on it immediately. If you bang your finger with a hammer, hold your hand in the air for 20 minutes. You'll be surprised by the curative powers of ice and gravity. Do not inhale smoke. Take a deep breath. Do not smart off to a policeman. Be good. Be honest with yourself, diplomatic with others. Do not go crazy a lot. It's a waste of time. Drink plenty of water. When asked what you would like to drink, say, "Water, please." Take out the trash. Love life. Use exact change. When there's shooting in the street, don't go near the window. Lines from a long poem by Ron Padgett, How to Be Perfect, published by Coffee House Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. and by Barnes & Noble, maker of Nook Simple Touch with Glow Light, designed for reading with the lights on or off, available at Barnes & Noble stores or Nook.com. Edited by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This is Marion Call. I'll be performing at the Goldtown Theater at 7 p.m. on June 13th as the final performance in this season's KRNN Spotlight Series. Join me and Kate Burkhart for a candid interview, and then I'll perform a concert of original Alaskan folk music with my father, Paul Pugh, on guitar. Tickets are at the station, at the door, and at KRNN.org, where you'll also find links to listen to my music. Again, that's June 13th, 7 p.m. at the Goldtown Theater.
Time is 3:41, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. The Mudroom's events concluded for this season, but here's one that was recorded last February.
Last but not least, Miss Amanda Kraft was born and raised in Alaska and has lived in Talkeetna, Eagle River, and Juneau. She has a twin sister, Leah, and yes, they do read each other's minds. Amanda's a JDHS 10-year, oh no, Amanda's JDHS 10-year high school reunion is this summer, and she's both excited and unsure of how time passed so quickly. 10 years of high school. I wish it was my 10-year reunion. After living those 10 years since high school in Portland and Los Angeles, Amanda has happily moved back to Juneau and is working at Harborview Elementary School. Please welcome to the stage Amanda Kraft.
Ooh. Hello. I didn't think it was possible to sweat through a leather jacket, but I think I might have just done it. This story takes place when I was 10 years old on a fly-out caribou hunting trip with my father. And my dad was a pilot by hobby, so we always had a float plane of some sort, so we had a Super Cub, and we lived on a lake, so it was easy to park it out front. And there were three distinct things that I remember about this trip. One was that my dad bought me a pound of gummy bears. And I was allowed to eat them as soon as we set up camp. And my twin sister did not go on this trip, and she could not have those gummy bears. Two, no one actually explained what would happen after we got a caribou. I didn't really know what happened after, and I have a very vivid, seared image in my brain of cutting an animal from top to bottom and having the insides become the outsides. And I was wondering why I ate all of those gummy bears at that moment. But I did not barf, and my father said he was very proud of me, so that means a lot. But the one thing that I really remember was the flight home. So we loaded up our gear, we had our caribou, and we headed home, and this was in the summertime in Eagle River outside of Anchorage, and so usually it's pretty light out at that point. But the weather was not that great as we got closer to home. Very dark, and the wind was picking up tremendously. In my adult brain, when I look back on this story now, I realize a lot of red flags. But as a 10-year-old, I had no idea what was really going on. And the first one being, my dad wanted to land at a neighboring lake, which we did, about 10 miles away, because he wanted to check the weather. But this was before cell phones, and so we tied the plane to a tree, because this is not where we lived, like a dog, and went and knocked on doors till someone let us in so we could call our neighbor on the lake that we lived on to check the weather. And after a brief conversation, we decided to go. We said, all right, load up, let's go. Let's go home. So once we got airborne, I think he and I realized that that might have not been the best idea at that moment. Looking back now, at the time I was completely oblivious, but he said he wanted to circle the lake a few times before we landed. And now we've flown in this plane what seemed like hundreds of times, and we have never done this. So now my adult brain realizes we were probably burning off fuel. And my kid brain was like, okay, whatever, that sounds fine. And at that point, the plane was shaking pretty violently. So turbulence up and down. And then also, if you've ever ridden in a Super Cub airplane, shaking, actually, a whole plane shaking. And you have to wear, you know, the big earphones with the microphone to talk to one another. And the plane at that point also was doing a lot of listing side to side. And when we finally decided we were going to make our approach up to land on the lake, that was when I think the real panic hit. Because the command from my father at that point was, put your life jacket on. Why? I didn't really know why we were doing that. And then followed by the question, do you remember how to open the airplane door if you need to get out? And then it was waterworks. Like the moment I think I've ever cried the most in my entire life. And in the Super Cub airplane, my dad was sitting in front and I was sitting in back. So he had really no idea of what was happening. But I was full on, snot-nosed, wailing. I mean, I'm sure he heard me on the microphone, but I think he was a little bit preoccupied with what was going on. So when we finally decided to land, I just remember the plane almost was listing so hard from side to side that you could, it felt like I could reach out and touch the tips of the trees. We were that close to the trees. And we come in and we land pretty hard. Boom, 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 boom. And then all of a sudden we're taxiing like any other flight that we've gone out on. And I'm still sobbing, still sobbing, still sobbing. We pull into our dock. I get out and my dad says, why are you crying? Why are you crying? And I lit my life vest that I had on was soaking wet. I mean, we're talking like the hardest I've ever cried. And he said, we were fine. What did you think was going to happen? And I said, thought we were going to die. And he's like, no, we were fine. Everything was fine. So this was the other flag. He said, don't worry about unloading the plane. He would never say that, by the way. We always unloaded our gear and put our gear away. And this is probably close to midnight at this point. And he said, I'll just get the meat. We'll put it in the garage. Why don't you go hop in the truck and we're going to go to 7-Eleven? Okay. Immediately, I was reassured. Like, tears dried up. 7-Eleven. All right. So I go get in the truck. We drive to 7-Eleven. And my dad seems to sort of have like this extra spring in his step, like going into 7-Eleven, almost like a jog. And he goes, you can get whatever you want. You pick out whatever you want. And I thought, yeah, like this is the best trip ever. I got gummy bears. Leah, my sister, is not on this trip. I get to do whatever I want. Now we're going to 7-Eleven. And so I picked out a big red soda. I don't know if any of you have ever had that. But it's like 1,000 packs of gum in liquid form. And I was never allowed to have that. And so I went up and that was my one thing. And I remember sitting on the curb outside of the Eagle River 7-Eleven at midnight and drinking my Big Red thinking this is the most amazing thing ever. And I look over at my dad and he has blown through an entire pack of cigarettes. Go, 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 go. Other, like working on like pack two. Boom, boom, boom. And I just kind of was like, well, that's a little bit strange. And strangely, we never talked about this entire incident ever again until about 15 years later. I had actually forgotten all about it because I thought everything was fine, right? He had said everything was fine, so everything was fine. And 15 years later, I was having some sort of like early 20s crazy melodrama situation, I'm sure, that involved a job or a boy or moving or like all of the above. And my dad was trying to give me fatherly advice, which was great. And he was talking about not having regrets and the usual kind of spiel, and which was really sweet. And he said, you know, I don't really have any regrets at all ever, except that one time. I do have one. When we flew back from that hunting trip, and I went, what? Because I had thought everything was fine. I mean, I knew things were not fine, but, and I started crying on the phone. And It was so sweet. And not really crying because I was sad, but crying because in that moment of like the most terrified I'd ever been, and the most terrified I've ever been to this day. I mean, a plane crash? I mean, come on. It's pretty scary, especially for a 10-year-old. He was able to totally remove any emotion from that situation and solely comfort me, even though clearly by the cigarette smoking, he was really stressed and probably really afraid. And now he was admitting these things. And it was so sweet for him to say them and also like to have comforted me in that way. And I think about it now and it does make me tear up a little bit. But so when I thought about the story I was going to tell and the theme was for the love of it, it really came down to for the love of him. So thank you.
That was recorded last Mudrooms event in February. Thanks to Mark Wheeler and Amanda Compton for providing that material.
Tonight on 360 North, at 8 o'clock, see a great program about those who fly above the great land on Alaska's Bush Pilots commercial operations. That's followed by another documentary about flying in Alaska, Denali Flyers, at 9. Rescues at Sea is at 9:30. Then the Miller Center Forum brings us the Black History of the White House. That's at 10. All tonight on 360 North. Visit us at 360north.org or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
brand new to the station from the Marcus Roberts Trio, featuring Bella Fleck on the banjo. There's also something new from the Monks of the Desert. Time is 3:58, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. We broadcast 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Ballynock Bay Area, tune to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1, K220 BT Sarasuna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTUO on K210 AS 89.9. Also live online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up tomorrow at 3 on a June afternoon, Pat Moore will be your host. He'll talk with the organizers of Saturday's Family Fishing Day at the lake. Eric Boris from Trail Mix will be here to highlight Saturday's award ribbon cutting for the Under Thunder Trail. Wendy Hamilton and Russ Stevens will be here at the preview of next week's Weight of the Nation presentation at Centennial Hall. And Nancy DeTourney will be here to give us a rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. That Writer's Almanac Music and more tomorrow, 3 on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, periods of rain, low temperatures around 43 degrees. Forecast for tomorrow, showers with high temperatures around 53 degrees. Forecast for Friday, mostly cloudy skies with isolated showers in the morning. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning into Juneau Afternoon today, and have a pleasant evening.
Must run government like a business is really a silly idea.
Does being a good CEO make for a good president?
Today is Wednesday, May 30th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Mitt Romney touts his success in business as one of his qualifications for president, but does that experience translate to government?
Also, a Tea Party insurgent forces a runoff in Texas in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate.
This race is ground zero in the battle between the moderate establishment and the conservative Tea Party tidal wave.
And the $2 billion experiment to improve care for one state's Medicaid patients.
This is really a defining moment for health care in the state of Oregon, and I think if we are successful, probably for health care beyond our borders.